It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in the second half hour, I have to say, one of the most riveting conversations I've had in the 10 years I've been hosting this program, a conversation I recorded earlier today with Holocaust survivor Max Rodriguez Garcia. He's now in his 90s. He survived the Auschwitz extermination camp, where more than a million people, mostly Jews, were murdered during World War II. Garcia is speaking tonight at the Fairfield Arts and Convention Center. That conversation coming up in the second half hour. First, it's called the American Health Care Act, and Republicans in Congress want it to replace the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, which was enacted in 2010. As the Republican health care plan to replace Obamacare struggles to gain congressional support, we want to find out what such a replacement might mean for Iowans. And to do that, to help us do that, Pete Damiano is with us, director of the University of Iowa Public Policy Center, also a professor in the College of Dentistry at the University of Iowa. Pete, welcome to our studio once again. You had to know you were going to get the call every time there's a shift in the Affordable Care Act up to now and now into this. So we want you to be our explainer, and we want you, our listeners, to reach out to us with your questions about this proposed, it's called the American Health Care Act. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Especially if you're concerned about losing your health insurance provided under the Affordable Care Act. Let's start off with this. The big news this week, a new report from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office finding that this Republican bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act would do many things. It would, for one, reduce the federal deficit by $337 billion over a decade, but would also leave 24 million more Americans uninsured during that same period. React to the CBO report, and specifically because this administration has been, saying it's not reliable, to say the least. What do you draw out of the CBO report?
Well, I think the CBO report is reflecting what many who study health policy would have expected because of the types of changes that have been discussed, you know, both during the campaign and some of the previous Republican proposals that have come through in the last few years. If you're going to try to reduce the federal role in healthcare and healthcare spending, you're going to end up logically with having more people who are uninsured, underinsured, and pushing more of the costs on to states, local governments, and individuals. And I think that's pretty much what the CBO report said. You know, there's a lot of people that want this plan, Speaker Ryan's plan, if you will, that's been endorsed by President Trump to be it and push this through as quickly as possible. I think we're seeing pretty clearly this is really a starting point, and now you're starting to hear that this is phase one of maybe phase two and phase three. The House Budget Committee this morning is going through and doing their markup of it. And then obviously you're going to have the Senate weighing in and then the president chiming in at different times. So it really is, it seems like it's the most complete plan that has been put forward, and it really is still a starting point.
Okay, let's talk about what we do know here, and perhaps just cast it as the differences, the biggest differences, especially for Iowans, between what is currently there, the Affordable Care Act, and this new proposal.
Well, there's obviously a big difference in priorities between the Affordable Care Act and the American Health Care Act, if you will. As you mentioned, in terms of trying to cover the uninsured, with the Affordable Care Act, we've covered approximately 20 million people with health insurance coverage and have declined the number of uninsured in the country to the lowest point it's been basically in recorded time. With this plan, over the next 10 years, it is estimated that the number of uninsured would basically go back up to similar number of what it was and maybe even slightly more than what it was prior to 2010 when the ACA was passed, and really prior to 2014 when a number of the key insurance provisions of the ACA kicked in. Mm-hmm. And that happens in several different ways. When you think about health insurance, without getting too much detail, you really do have to split it up between the public insurance side of it and the private insurance side. And then on the private insurance side, between those people that purchase individual health insurance and those people that get it through their employer. So on the public insurance side, at the state level, and the things that most people are going to care about is Medicaid and the Medicaid expansion, which in 2020 right now is estimated that the enhanced payment will start to go away, which will basically eliminate the expansion, if you will. Under the Affordable Care Act, states were given 100% of the cost of the Medicaid. So there was, right now, Medicaid is a state, part federal paid for, part state paid for. But for that portion of the population who was added, these are primarily single adults who didn't qualify for Medicaid before. The state's got 100% of the cost for those people, and then it just declined to 90% for this year. Under the AHCA, that will go away and go back down to the regular match, which in Iowa is around two-thirds of the match for those people.
Mm-hmm. So the impact here, we're talking about an impact on thousands or perhaps tens of thousands of poor or disabled Iowans?
Right. About 150,000 to 170,000 people in Iowa gain coverage through the Medicaid expansion. And so what will happen is they won't necessarily automatically lose coverage. I mean, that's going to be sort of to be determined. But the state won't get the same amount of money that they got before for those people. And then there's also something that's being proposed in here where right now states get basically reimbursed for what it spends for Medicaid. And they want to cap that on a per capita basis, and that's where the savings come from at the federal level. But what you might say is deficit reduction or savings is basically a cost shift to the states. So then the states will have to decide, are we going to adapt with potentially some new flexibility from the federal government, although Iowa's been having waiver programs going back to 1990 at least, to be able to experiment with different things. But they will then, with the maybe a little more flexibility, reduce eligibility, reduce the quality of the services, say certain things may not be covered anymore. Iowa's always done a good job. There's things that have been required in Medicaid and some things that are optional to cover, optional things. Adult dental care, for example, is an optional service that Iowa's done a good job of covering. Many states that have reduced that have found later their costs actually go up because people go into the emergency room for dental care. So there's all these, you know, unintended consequences that happen when you, especially with healthcare, when you start reducing things like that.
I want to join our conversation, Pete Damiano with us, director of the University of Iowa Public Policy Center, talking about the possibility of having the American Health Care Act, the AHCA, replace the Affordable Care Act, the ACA. Join our conversation if you have concerns about your own health coverage, perhaps now provided under the ACA, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Pete will be with us until half past the hour. But if you do have a question, get that call in as soon as possible. So the other, as I gather from what you said, the other big coverage difference for Americans, for Iowans as well, is the way the subsidy works. Now, lower income people have been given subsidies to whatever degree based on their income. And so this is also going to be a change in terms of it reprioritizes who should get these?
Right. So right now, from in terms of the federal poverty level, from 0 to 138% of poverty, those are people who are eligible for the Medicaid and Medicaid expansion. From 138 to 400%, you could call those poor people, but we're really getting into middle-income folks, if you will. They're given a sliding subsidy to be able to purchase private insurance through the health insurance exchanges. That's the healthcare.gov site. And so, in essence, they're being given the same thing that most people with private health insurance who get their insurance through their employer get but don't see it. And that's because their employer can write it off of their taxes. Mm. So the government is subsidizing those people. But if you – and 70 to 80% of these people are working people and their families. So these aren't people who aren't doing anything. And the 138 to 400, it's even a higher proportion than that. They're working at jobs where they don't get a benefit. And so this allows them to be able to continue to work or do whatever they're doing and get the similar kind of subsidy that these other folks are. And by the time you get to 400% of poverty, that subsidy is pretty low. And there's actually been complaints that it hasn't been enough at that level, but under this, it would get both scaled back further in terms of the proportion of poverty where you'd get a subsidy, and then also shifts it so it's no longer based on income. It's going to be based on age, and it's going to be a flat amount. So in the younger age brackets, if you will, you're going to get $2,000, but that's going to go further in purchasing your health insurance than the $4,000 who somebody is, say, 55 and has some chronic health conditions.
Mm-hmm. We have a number of people who want to ask their questions of Pete Damiano. Before we go to that, can you sum up simply, and I know it's been said, who would have thought healthcare can be so complicated? Can you sum up the winners and losers in a few short sentences?
Sure. I mean, in general, if you are younger, healthier, or wealthier, because all of the payment side, if you will, how the ACA was financed, all of those are going to go away, and most of those were relatively small taxes on wealthier people. So there's going to be a big cost shift, if you will, to both younger, healthier folks and the wealthy, and then the older adults pre-Medicare, especially those with a health condition, their costs are going to go way up.
Okay. 1-866-780-9100. Let's quickly go to some calls. We have about 10 minutes left with Pete Damiano. James in Davenport. Hi. Welcome to our program.
Hi, how's it going?
What's on your mind in this discussion?
My question is, since the Republicans say that 52 votes in the House or in the Senate, so they're trying to pass this through reconciliation, which means they can't affect any of the laws the way the Affordable Care Act is structured, so they can only change the funding. So is this really a repeal and replacement of Obamacare or just a tax cut for wealthy folks?
Okay, James, we'll see what Pete has to say about
that.
Yeah,
I think at this point it is a wait and see. And from my understanding, because the CBO markup said that there would be a decline in the deficit over time, that allows it to potentially be done through reconciliation process and that lower vote count. However, in some of the talk that's going on, we still don't, I mean, obviously we don't even know what the final bill is going to look like. But in addition, there's some that are suggesting a part two and a part three. And if those things come in some of the ways that have been discussed, so for example, in this, the quality of the benefit has not been affected substantially yet in terms of what's called the 10 essential health benefits that have to be covered. But there are almost every other plan and in every discussion that's been proposed about the repeal and replace, there's talk that it's too generous, we need to cut it back.
Mm-hmm.
And then if that happens, that could change the cost structure. So whether that deficit reduction will still be there or not isn't clear.
Okay, a couple things that we've heard from the president. Just give me your view on the veracity of this is, of what this is, that the Affordable Care Act is imploding, that it's collapsing on its own weight is some of the terms that's used. From your perspective, is that true?
Are there things that people on both sides of this think need to be changed? Absolutely. Is it imploding? And where the imploding tends to be coming, that discussion is on the individual health insurance market. What's forgotten is that the individual health insurance market was not doing great prior to the change in 2014 and the individual mandate coming in, because you had all those issues with pre-existing conditions and annual maximums and lifetime maximums. And many people, even with employer-based insurance, that the quality of their insurance wasn't very good, and all of those things changed. Is that a tough market? Absolutely, because it's relatively small. Your ability to risk pool people together on that individual side is not great. There have been some shifts because you now have to cover a number of things. The one you hear a lot about is pregnancy coverage. And why should I, if I'm a 27-year-old male, have to pay for pregnancy coverage? Well, that's because of, again, the pooling issue. And we'd like to get more younger people into the pool, et cetera. But most of the data does not say it's imploding. In fact, the premium increases has slowed from prior, between 2001 and 6, it was 63%. In the last 5 years, it was only 20%.
Okay. The other thing being said by the president, quickly before we go back to phones, please, Pete, is the CBO prediction, 14 million out of insurance by next year. Over 10 years, 24 million total. He says the CBO is just makes bad predictions. We shouldn't pay attention to these numbers. You're a public policy expert. How do you evaluate the CBO's evaluation?
Yeah, if you look back at what the CBO projected for what was going to be the result of the ACA, their global numbers were actually almost right on. One of the components that was off had to do with the Medicaid expansion, and because a number of those estimates were being made prior to the Supreme Court ruling that gave states flexibility to opt out of the Medicaid expansion. And so you've got a huge difference between, you know, in coverage, between the states that did do the expansion and those that didn't. Same with uncompensated care, went way down in the states that did the expansion versus elsewhere. And that's where you could make some argument over the CBO estimates were off. But actually, there was a Commonwealth report that came out last year looking at those numbers and said the CBO was actually the most accurate of all the projections.
Okay, let's go to Chris. Chris calling from Lake Mills, listening to Iowa Public Radio. Hi, Chris. I don't know if this affects you at all, this affects you personally at all, but what's your question?
Well, I don't really have a question. It's just more of a comment that we hear commentary all the time on health insurance. The GOP, now they have a new plan. I think, as a conservative person, that the plan is basically a debacle. I think it's a sleight of hand to replace what's there. And like I said, that's coming from a conservative-minded person.
Why do you use the words debacle and sleight of hand, if I can ask?
Well, because it doesn't seem like it fixes anything. It's just a similar plan that, according to most commentators, is worse by the numbers. But I think that about 25% of the commentary is probably factual. About 75% is speculation, which generates fear among people. I can tell you, being in the middle class, that insurance is killing me as far as cost is concerned. Nothing has been fixed by either side. So I think that the new plan needs to be scrapped. I think the Democrats and Republicans need to come together, and we need to come up with something that actually works. We don't need all this paper juggling, sleight of hand, and stuff.
Okay.
You got to quit with the fear and whatnot. So
okay, Chris, thank you. Thank you for your perspective. Chris calling from Lake Mills. Cindy emailing us, listener. Cindy wonders, will mental health coverage change under this plan? Do we know that?
We don't yet, and that's what that issue about the 10 essential health benefits, that in this first round of the proposal is still in there. There is a lot of concern that mental health, and particularly substance use, counseling and services, which with the opioid epidemic and all of those kinds of things has really been beneficial under this, could get waived if the federal government gives the states a lot more flexibility to be able, in terms of what they might cover. That could also affect mental health coverage. So the federal parity laws have been really important, in my opinion, because the distinction between physical health and mental health anymore, it is, there really shouldn't be one. They're basically the same thing, and they're interactive.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand the bill also removes the mandate for employers to offer health insurance. We've talked about mandates here before. So is there a mandate under this new plan?
There's no mandate. So it gets rid of both the individual mandate, which is a part that everyone has hated. Nobody likes to feel like they're being forced to do something.
Right.
But it actually only affects about 6% of the population. But everybody feels it, and they feel like the government, it's Scalia's argument that they shouldn't force people to eat broccoli. But then you ask people about all the components of the ACA, and in general, people are supportive of getting pre-existing conditions and all those things. The employer mandate has been actually relatively small impact, in that almost all employers over 100 employees were already covering their with health insurance for recruitment retention purposes. They dropped that down to 50. There were some companies, and the ones that it were, they might have 47, 48, 51, 52 employees. Yeah, they're actually affected in some sort of a somewhat major change. But that would go away. And there was some talk that you'd lose about 2 million people with employer-based insurance. But employers have been shifting their costs onto their employees more and more for years. And states are changing their Medicaid programs similarly because of costs.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about what the differences between these two plans. The new plan keeps any part of Obamacare? It does, doesn't it? The popular parts.
Well, it says it will, right, like the pre-existing conditions, annual maximums, keeping young people on their parents' policies to 26.
You're skeptical?
Well, those were all predicated on the fact that you had the individual mandate, and the insurance companies said, we'll go along with getting rid of those things if you force everyone to come in and buy insurance. With the lack of the individual mandate and this shift to they're going to have a penalty that if you drop coverage or lose your coverage for 2 months, you're then going to have a 30% higher premium each month for the next year, thinking that will be a way to force people to keep continuity insurance. But the CBO report says basically that's not going to work. And I think if you think of it from a behavioral economics perspective, it would be hard to imagine that most people are, especially these folks, are paying enough attention to their coverage. Many of these people have never even had coverage before. They lapse, whether they know it or not, and they get this penalty that's going to force anything.
Okay, Pete, we have unfortunately just a minute or so left. Just to perhaps speak directly to people listening concerned about this. As we wrap up, perhaps to summarize very quickly, who should be concerned at this point if this new health care law takes effect?
Well, I think it's a question of keeping an eye on where this is moving, obviously, because this is the starting point of seeing that. People who hear about funding at the state level and the cost shift that's going to happen when they hear about the federal deficit going down, that's not saving money. That's a shift of money. So what that's going to mean at the state level, so then what's going to mean for people who are on Medicaid or the Medicaid expansion, people that have been able to buy insurance for the first time through the individual market, through the health insurance exchanges. Those are the folks that really kind of need to keep an eye on where this is going and what it might mean for them, as hard as that can be at times to know what those implications are.
Pete Damiano of the Iowa Public Policy Center, we will for sure be back in touch with you as we watch how the health care landscape in our country changes under the Republican leadership in Washington. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Ben. Always a pleasure.
Coming up, a conversation with Max Rodriguez Garcia. He survived the Auschwitz extermination camp under the Nazis during the Second World War. You want to stay tuned. I can't remember a more compelling conversation I've had in the 10 years that I've been doing this show. That's coming up. Garcia owes his survival at Auschwitz to luck and to the fact that a Nazi doctor wanted to experiment on him because he had acute appendicitis.
In San Francisco, I mentioned it to a guy at the Jewish community. And he said, my God, Max, he said, you have a claim for experimental medication. And so we sent a claim into the German government, and lo and behold, later on, they sent me a check for $3,500 with an admission that I had been experimented with.
Stay tuned. After the break, the miraculous firsthand account of survivor of Auschwitz, Max Rodriguez Garcia, who's speaking this evening in Fairfield. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. ¶¶